whatever they did, however they did to create the Pokemon universe and put it on screen in a way that feels like you could reach into the screen and literally touch these characters. I mean, I'm not giving away Nobel Prizes for a living, but I would if I could, because that was amazing. I mean, seeing Detective Pikachu for the first time in living, breathing color is unlike any experience I think I've ever had in my life.
Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. That was Ryan Reynolds talking about his new film, Pokemon, Detective Pikachu, and Bill Bregoli. Hello, Bill Bregoli.
Hi there.
Is going to tell you all about that, and I'm joined, as always, by Bill McCuddy.
It's kind of a hostage situation for me because
yes,
this
is
my apartment.
And Bill McCuddy has this beautiful help poster from the Beatles that he's going to give me on consignment. Unbelievable. Anyway, I'm Neil Rosen, and Bill Bregoli, take it away. Tell me about Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
Well, it stars Ryan Reynolds, Justice Smith, Catherine Newton, Bill Nye is in this, and Ken Watanabe.
Love Bill Nye.
Bill Nye, the science guy?
No.
Bill Nye, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
Love Actually.
The Squid Guy, yeah.
Right.
And what happens, there is a plot to this, but it's based on the 90s. Apparently, everybody who grew up in the 1990s played this game, or so my young co-workers tell me.
Girl in the Cafe. I'm just going to keep mentioning Bill Nye movies
all the way through
the whole podcast.
You go right ahead. But wait,
only the Pikachu thing is animated. Everybody else is real.
Everybody's real, but there are a lot of other Pokemon characters.
Oh, okay.
So is it like Pokemon Go, where you like see the characters crop up, and that's the virtual, not virtual reality, it's called AR, something. Artificial reality.
They're everywhere.
You don't know what I'm talking about.
They're everywhere in this city called...
Neil Rosen is AR.
Yeah. And there's this detective. He goes missing. He's a human detective. He goes missing, and his son goes looking for him. And his son meets his father's Pokemon. Apparently, humans in this world, humans team up with Pokemon.
Man, this sounds...
You've seen it and you seem confused.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And
is it hard to follow?
No, it really isn't hard to follow.
So like an old Warner
Brothers cartoon.
It's
hard to explain, but it's not hard to follow. It's like, what?
I made a joke. I said, like an old Warner Brothers Looney Tunes cartoon.
Not at all. Not at all. But anyway, he meets up with the Pikachu. The Pikachu is voiced by Ryan Reynolds. And he comes across as sort of a small, hairy, PG-rated Deadpool.
Well, okay. Since I was subjected to Pokemon when my daughter was young,
yeah,
and I remember sitting through these movies, and they were just god-awful, and that Pikachu voice is like, Pika, Pika.
Right, he's Pika, Pika to everyone except...
No,
thankfully. He goes Pika, Pika to everyone, every other human, except this character played by Justice Smith. To him, he talks, and they can understand each other.
He talks, sounds like Ryan Reynolds. When
he sounds like Ryan Reynolds, and he's making weird jokes. He brings up nipples at one point. You can tell that they're like, Ryan, make this PG.
Deadpool this up a little, or the other way, make it keep it clean.
They probably had to tell him to de-Deadpool it a little bit. But the plot, other than what I just explained, is kind of... people faking their own deaths and coming back and things changing and Pokemon weirdness all over the place. But I don't know. I couldn't quite understand what was going on, but I just kind of watched it and people seemed to be paying rapt attention, all the young ones. But I'm kind of like, okay, when's this going to be over? Because I didn't grow up with Pokemon, and I was smart enough not to have kids.
Well,
and Neil's always asking this question. So it wasn't funny to you as a grown up, like the jokes didn't play, or wasn't?
They did play, thanks to Ryan Reynolds. But those kind of jokes were probably going over the heads of kids.
Do you guys remember the Ryan Reynolds movie where he was a serial killer and he made his dog talk and his fish talk? I think it was called. I think it was called The Voices.
Huh.
And he lived in that apartment, and Anna Kendrick was in it too. Anna Kendrick's in it.
Huh.
Hyphen S. He was the voice of this dog. Did he talk kind of like this? Remember?
No, I did not see that movie.
Yes, you did. We reviewed it. I swear to God, it was called The Voices. I think.
Wow.
Well, I do remember the Ryan Reynolds movie where he was in a box the entire movie. And do you remember this one?
Yeah.
He was animated in that thing.
It was called The Box.
Let me out of
here. It was the box. I did that.
The entire movie, he's just in a box.
That wasn't called Shallow Grave?
No, it's called The Box.
All right.
I believe.
Right. Well, anyway, this was shown during a giant premiere.
We had to get out of the box. A week ago. There's a cell phone in there that gets discovered 10 minutes in. It was all these things that happened. Right. How's he going to get out of the box?
Okay.
It really kind of sucked.
All right. Was Bill Nye in that?
Bill Nye. Nor, the science guy nor the actor were in that.
All right. So there was a big premiere for this thing. They took over 40s, pretty much most of the AMC 25 on 42nd Street.
Okay.
They had a red carpet out and back, and there was assigned seating
in the alley.
Yeah, no, there's not an alley.
Sounds
behind that
posh.
Theater. There's another street behind that. This okay. 41st Street.
Okay,
that's where they had the red carpet. But it was craziness. They had a dress code. You had to dress business. Business attire.
What?
Yes, there was a dress code.
Why? For
there were at least 3 to 4 theaters showing the movie. And there was assigned seating according to your ticket. And I was talking to one of my Warner Brothers reps the next day as I was about to do a couple interviews, and I said, "Geez, did you get some rest? It was really crazy. It looked really crazy. You had a lot to do last night." She goes, "Oh my God, it got even crazier than you saw because there were rats in one of the theaters." And some of the people started.
Were they voiced
out.
By Ryan Reynolds?
I know. Then they wouldn't have minded.
Right. Well, we'll play the game. I have no interest in seeing this movie.
No, but the rats at the 42nd Street, was it the Regal or the one across? No, it was the Regal, right?
It was the Regal. Yeah.
Well, that's, that sounds interesting.
Would you go to this movie, Bill?
No, I have no desire.
Good for you.
And you wouldn't recommend this movie?
No, not for anybody grown up.
And would you recommend it for kids?
So it's good for Neil.
Kids are fine.
That's right. All right, moving on. Tolkien, the gentleman who wrote Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and, I don't know, all that stuff.
And
that
don't people mispronounce his name in it, too? And doesn't he constantly correct them? It's Tolkien, or it's Tolkien, or
not
whatever.
I remember.
The trailer I've
with
seen,
you.
It looks like somebody calls him Tolkien, and he goes, "It's Tolkien," or whatever. So that's Nicholas Holt.
That's Nicholas Holt. And
it sounds like you're doing that bit from Young Frankenstein. It's Frankenstein, you know, or something.
Right.
That's what it sounds like you're doing, you know.
Well,
all right. So anyway, he wrote all those books and
right.
maybe in all those movies that I can't stand, but nonetheless, okay, so now there's a movie about his life.
Speaking that's of right. abnormal brains, continue.
And there's nothing
Bill.
Like a movie about a writer because they're so exciting to watch.
Yeah.
And it tells how he was brought up by a foster family. He goes to a posh school, even though he can't really afford it. Falls in love with a girl, hangs out with all his writer buddies at the school. World War I breaks out, and most of his writer buddies are killed or badly injured. He's slightly injured and a little messed up coming out of World War I and has a bad case of survivor guilt. And during the war, they keep showing these scenes where it's like the one special effect in the movie where he imagines a giant fire-breathing dragon. And somehow from there, you're supposed to get the idea that this is what inspired The Hobbits and The Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff.
That sounds kind of interesting.
It's kind of, but it's so slow.
As a concept.
Yeah, it's interesting as a concept, but you never really connect the dots.
And he didn't spend a lot of time in a veterans hospital after the war
sometime.
Where he dreamt all this up? Or
no, he comes home to
I'm just assuming that
he comes home to his family and he's all messed up. And he visits the grieving mothers of his buddies. And he's very downbeat, and the movie gets kind of slow. Luckily, he has a love interest played by Lily Collins, who's lovely.
So there's no, other than the seeing the, what was the catalyst you saying that you said?
The dragon.
The dragon. Other than that, there's no other insight into how he created this whole world.
Well, the movie seems to think it's giving this insight, but I didn't get it, to be honest with you. All of a sudden, he just came up with this stuff.
And do they show you him, like, writing The Hobbit? Or
oh, that's exciting to watch. No, they never show a guy
No, like,
writing.
I've got an idea, you know.
Yeah, they kind of work that in there, but...
And does anybody from any of the Lord of the Rings stuff have anything to do with this movie? Like, production or director
no,
or writer
No, in fact,
his
family has nothing to do with it as well. His estate.
Are there any characters' names, like... Smeagol or...
there's no Bilbo Baggins. There's none of that stuff.
Right, like, no. Like hey, Bill... You know, like
Frodo, no. right. All right.
It was kind of a snooze, to be honest with you.
Wow. Well, speaking of, well, I hate Lord of the Rings, so now, you know, definitely not seeing this. You, Bill?
No. And the other thing that's opening that they didn't show us, that they're not showing until tomorrow night, is Palms, the thing that stars Diane Keaton and every
Rhea Perlman.
Jackie Weaver.
Yeah, lots of people.
And my Larry friend, Mathers is my friend Celia Weston from Modern Family's in it. And I ran into her the other night at a screening. And we talked last week about this Angelica Houston.
Well, before we get to that.
Well, let me just say that.
I wanted to lead, because talking about writers who wrote stuff.
All right.
There's another movie about a famous writer.
Oh, please.
In his declining years, which opens.
That's opened this weekend?
All is True.
Yeah.
Which is Kenneth Branagh, who you saw the other day, and I did a junket and interviewed and spoke to him as well, is a movie about, you know, Kenneth Branagh is a Shakespeare freak. He's a fanatic. And, I mean, if you look at his IMDb page, I mean, there's so many roles that he's played from Shakespeare.
I think I counted his affiliation with about 9.
And now he's playing Shakespeare himself in a movie, as I said, called All is True, in his declining years. These are the last years of Shakespeare. All is True is the name of the alternate title of, was it Henry the
Fifth? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, well, nonetheless.
Well, the irony of the title is that we don't know if all this is true.
Right, so this talks that the last play that Shakespeare put on in the Globe Theater, the theater burns down, and he says, I'm not ever writing again, I'm going to retire. And he tries to reacquaint himself with his daughter, who's kind of nutty, and his wife played
by... She's just pissed off. She's not nutty.
Played by Dame Judi Dench. And he's grieving for a good part of the movie, now that he has time to, you know, be by himself and not put on plays, for his late son who died at, what, like 11?
Hamnet.
11
9,
years
I
old
think.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of a drag. I mean, he's just kind of like grieving. And there's one really good scene...
Gardening.
Where he's with Ian McKellen, you know, and they just have this... kind of duet together and talking about
Well, you should say that everybody's trying to get him to start writing again. So Ian is this sits in Earl's Court, I think, and comes to the little town of Stratford to try and talk Shakespeare into getting over his writer's block. I have to tell you that I was much more a fan of this film than you were, and I had a chance to talk to some of the Sony Classics people at this party that I went to for him. And, you know, this movie came out last year in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
it had its New York
release.
Premiere the other night here, but it had its L.A. screening out there for Oscar consideration. And the vice president of Sony Classics goes, Bill, you got the movie. You just don't even know it. And it's true. I'm sure I looked at a title called All Is True and thought it was a documentary or something and never bothered to put it in. And I'm sorry to say that, because I thought this is one of the best acting jobs that... that this man has ever done. Kenneth Branagh, as you say, is a huge... He's the one guy who could play Shakespeare. I think it's very handsomely photographed, and the story to me is interesting. I mean...
Well, I agree with you on the acting, and I agree with you on the cinematography, but I was really kind of bored by the story. Now, you probably saw it on a big movie screen.
I did.
Where I saw it on a link, you know, through my TV, and, you know, I just didn't find there was enough in the story, in the narrative, to just... You know, I watched the whole thing, but I was just kind of like yawning out, you know. Like,
well, you're not alone. I guess the Los Angeles Times or somebody, they were telling me, panned it when it came out last year. It never got any traction with critics. It's hovering around 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's like a C minus,
C plus.
There's
also a lot of, you know, I'm not the biggest Shakespeare, you know, aficionado.
But they don't speak in that pen.
No, they don't. It's iambic pentameter, and they don't speak that in that tone. They speak normally. But the point is, there's apparently reading about this after I saw it, because I'm saying maybe I missed something, you know, and everybody's saying the more you know Shakespeare and all the little details and all those plays that he wrote, the more you'll enjoy this, because there's all these little Easter eggs and all these little asides and, you know, not really knowing all that.
Well, I didn't know that either, and I still enjoyed it.
Well, I didn't like it. Bill?
I recommend it. There's lots of hot sex in it, Bill.
No, okay, there's not. There's not. And
can I do my Shakespeare impression?
Sure.
I do this in the act. Shakespeare coming home late at night drunk. To be or not to be, which is my apartment? All right, thank you. I'm here all week.
Yeah, be good to the waitresses. Yeah, they work hard. I don't recommend it. Bill McCuddy recommends it. Bill Bregoli, do you have any interest in seeing this film?
Maybe.
Thank you. I at least got a maybe out of him.
Yeah.
Threw me a bone.
Maybe you're not seeing this.
If it shows up and I'm watching TV and it just shows
if it's
up.
To be or not to be, we shall
all
see.
Right.
All right. It's not as deep as a well, nor as wide as a barn door, but twill serve.
The Handmaid's
Tale. What's
that
from?
That's let's get to what's opening in theaters. We glossed over a second ago. That's opening in a couple of theaters in what would be considered independent houses, art houses, and I recommend it. Then this other movie that we're not seeing until tomorrow night, we're taping this on a Wednesday, and it's the night before it opens, is Palms, this thing with Diane Keaton, Rhea Perlman. Pretty much, if you're in AARP and an actress, you're in this film. And I talked to you last week into reading this article that Angelica Houston did.
It was great, and I'm not being sarcastic. It really, as I texted you, I was mesmerized by that article. I mean, Bill McCuddy made me read this Peter Bogdanovich tell-all article.
Everybody I turned on to that article except you liked it.
And I was kind of bored by it. Maybe you overhyped it. But I will tell you that this was just...
it's an interview.
I don't overhype you under
what. It was great. I mean, she's just like talking shit about everybody, and it's so revelatory.
And one of the things she says is that you wouldn't catch me dead, or words to that effect, in a movie about cheerleaders that are aging. So Jackie Weaver the other day came out and said, Angelica Houston can go fuck herself. And I ran into Celia Weston from Modern Family and tons of other movies you've seen her in. And she's
Modern Family.
Film. The television show?
She's not in Modern Family.
Yes, she is.
Who is she in Modern Family?
She's one of the moms or one of the aunts or something. So she's been in everything.
Okay.
So
I'll take you at your word.
She's in Palms, and I run into her at this screening, and I go, hey, what do you think of Angelica Houston? She said, well, I just got back last night from the L.A. premiere. Everybody was talking about it, and we're a little disappointed. And then she said, frankly, for the record, I think it's careless that she said that without seeing the movie, because there's a strong ovarian cancer storyline, and a lot of the money that's being made from the movie is going for ovarian cancer awareness.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it was kind of shitty of Angelica Houston to say that.
Well, I agree. I think you shouldn't talk shit about any movie unless you see it. There's a lot of people who go, oh, I won't see that. Oh, that's horrible. Did you see it? No. You know, so you don't judge a book by its cover. And even though it doesn't look appealing to me, Palms, having seen the trailer, I mean, I cannot comment, you know, whether to go see a movie or not, unless I've seen the movie. And so I agree with that. But that aside, there was a lot of really great comments that she made about a lot of different people in that interview.
Jack Nicholson used cocaine like espresso for just a little bump.
Right. And her father, John Huston, the famous director, not that this is a big surprise, just was a huge philanderer, you know. But
and kind of a shit to her and the family.
Yeah, and I don't know, Ryan O'Neill, she had some interesting comments about Ryan O'Neill.
Psychopath.
Yeah, and I don't know, there was just, you just read it, it's just like, it's just reading like a Hollywood tabloid, except you believe it because she lived it, as opposed to reading like this.
Well, it's like set off all these other stories. I mean, everybody picked up on it and started running with it. It was originally in New York Magazine. That's where you can find the link. But Page Six picked three morsels out of it, and then Entertainment Tonight had two more things.
I read it on something called, you know, on Vulture. It said New York Vulture.
Oh, that's part of New York Magazine.
Yeah, that's New York Magazine.
So that's their online thing, you know. Yeah. But it was really long, but it did not bore me at all. I mean, it just like... oh, here's another Hollywood legend. Here's another story about, you know. And she's just dishing the dirt. Like, this guy's an asshole.
Great.
This woman's horrible to work with, you know.
Oprah, complete cunt.
She supports Woody Allen.
She didn't use the C word, but she loses the Oscar to Oprah that year.
And Oprah for the rest of her life.
Like, goes into a party where she's talking to Clint Eastwood and steps in between them. And she says, I'm staring at the back of Oprah's head.
Yeah, that was great. That's a great story. There's a lot of great stories in this. Yeah, just Google
dishy.
It online.
It's dishy. It's the kind of thing that you just don't see anymore.
That's true. Most people just are more, more politically correct.
There's a magnificent picture of her, too. She's 67, and this particular picture, she looks great.
Well, there's also a picture of her when she's, the word says, 1969 or 70.
In Nicholson's house or something,
yeah,
where she's wearing underwear.
She just looks terrific, but she just looks beautiful. I mean, you know, I never thought she was like, you know, one of those...
Hashtag me too.
Roman Polanski.
I never thought she was like the most attractive woman, you know. I mean, she was a good actress. But
no, she's exotic looking.
But she's... but Jack was not faithful to her. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, moving on. So The Handmaid's Tale, which I thought was...
Well, let's bring people up to date. You loved the first season. You liked the second season, but you hated the way it ended last season.
So I loved the first two seasons, except for the last 5 minutes of the second season, where I thought, how could you possibly do what they did in the end of the second season. At the end of for those unacquainted, The Handmaid's Tale, based on the first season, is based on the Margaret Atwood book. There was also a movie, The Handmaid's Tale, which wasn't so good, with Robert Duvall, Natasha Richardson, and Faye Dunaway. But they did a tremendous job with the series the first season, which follows the book religiously. And the second season, the book ends, so they just have a team of writers writing, you know, the continuation.
More
it's not
tales.
By Margaret Atwood, although she is a consultant on the series. And I thought it was great. But at the end of the second season, and I'm not giving anything away because the end of the second season happened like 10 months ago. You know, she's in this horrible dystopian society where women get raped constantly, and it's, you know, and they're just there to, you know, procreate. And it, the whole thing is just, it's a nightmare. It's just horrifying. And she, throughout the two seasons, she has a chance to escape. And it's, you know, at the last moment, something always goes wrong. And she's like an inch away from getting away, and just something goes wrong. And she actually has a legitimate chance to escape the second season. And she turns it down. That's the last segment. She decides, no, I'm not going to go.
Because she wants a third season, Neil. Because she wants a third season.
Right. So the only reason she stays is because she has she has two kids. One gets away. She gives it to Alexis Bledel, the actress.
Wait, without getting too much away.
This is all the second season.
But let me just ask a question. Is there, in this dystopian world, a place to escape to?
Canada's the
Or
place
does
to
she know that? Or?
Canada. Everybody knows that Canada is like the United States. It's like it's not this horrible society. Right. So she gives her child at the end of the second season, her newborn baby, to Alexis Bledel, who Bradley Whitford somehow makes it possible for them to get away. And these network of, not handmaidens, Marthas, they're called Marthas, make it possible for her to escape. And she turns it down because she has another kid that's there, and she's, I'm not leaving her there. Which is, if you know this show, it's the craziest. I mean, not only is everything in the two seasons has been directed towards her trying to get out of this place, the fact that she has an opportunity to get out and she turns it down is insane. And the only reason that she doesn't get out is because they want a third season, as Bill McCuddy said. So they have to, like, continue this. Although I thought it would have been much
better. This Neil Rosen spoiler apology is brought to you by LaCroix.
No. So in the third season, which they sent me the first five episodes, which comes to Hulu in June, I saw the first three. Yeah, it's the same problem. She's there. She's trying to get her kid, and she's trying to escape. And, you know, it's just, I don't want to give any spoilers about the third season. I'll just say that this fundamental premise of her not taking the opportunity to escape to Canada, which bugged the shit out of me.
Well, that sounds like it's just going to keep bugging you. So are you going to drop it? Are you not going to watch it?
No, but I also think that it's, you know, maybe it'll get better, but it's certainly not on par with the first two seasons. Sans, you know, without those last 5 minutes of the second season. It's okay. Elizabeth Moss is, I mean, the cast is still great. I think it's Yvonne Strahovski, who played Mrs. Waterford. I thought she deserved an Emmy last year. She's still doing a really good job. The acting's great, to use your own. It shot well. And it's okay, but the fundamental premise of her still being in this, you know, horrible. It would be like in a, you know, if you were in a concentration camp and you had a chance to escape, and you're like, no, I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna stay there. I'm gonna change the whole system.
Listening to this podcast where you keep going on and on
right,
and on,
right.
And you keep listening.
So let's move on. So
by the way, I don't think I coined the term "shot well," but thank you. And did anyone see the other Elizabeth Moss thing where she's the
that's supposed to be terrible
rocker?
Her smell.
Or what?
Yeah, it just became available on demand.
Yeah, it's out there. I just wanted to tell people about
it. Well, that's supposed to be just. I mean,
it's supposed to be a brave performance.
I saw
her.
The trailer. Yeah. It looks terrible. It played at the either the New York or the Hampton Film Festival last year.
I don't think we had it at the Hamptons. It was probably New York.
Somewhere, and everybody just said, oh, God, avoid that movie. That is just terrible. Apparently, it's not coherent in terms of plot. It's just she's this burnt-out punk rocker, and she's just all, like, drugged up half the time. And
then they dropped a music video from it yesterday or the day before, and I couldn't get more. I just wanted to hear if she could sing. She kind of can't. I turned it off.
It's supposed to be just awful. But again, let's not judge a book by its cover. Who knows?
And she's Scientologist, so it was Neil that didn't like it. I sort of liked it.
What?
Nothing. They're coming after you.
We didn't see.
They'll come
you.
After you. Right. Neil's looking at his notes while he does.
So last
that, we'll
night I went to
now.
Broadway. Oh. On old Broadway.
Wait, do we care about this?
Yeah, we do everything on this show. Well, the Tony nominations.
Whether you care or not.
The Tony nominations came out last week.
Yeah, but it sort of snubbed this, didn't it?
It sure did not.
I mean, Aaron Sorkin okay, so we're talking about the revival of
To Kill a Mockingbird. And I think this is right in our wheelhouse, considering that To Kill a Mockingbird, the movie, I mean, not only is it based on the Harper Lee book, but the movie won the Academy Award for Best Picture. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Gregory Peck certainly, I think, won the Academy Award. So this
and this version portrays children as adults, and that's what we do on this podcast.
That's right. They're, the Scout is played by, all the kids are played by grown-ups. And there's like little artistic touches that I don't think really make sense. I mean, in the sense that, you know, in the courtroom, Aaron Sorkin, who wrote the Steve Jobs movie and wrote The West Wing and
Social Network.
Thank you. You know, he actually turned it more into a courtroom drama than the movie. I mean, most of it takes place in the courtroom.
Sports Night. I'll do this through the
but
whole.
But he's big on courtroom dramas, having done A Few Good Men. I mean, this is also in his specialty.
Molly's Game.
Jeff Daniels is great, playing the Atticus Finch role that was made famous by Gregory Peck. One of the artistic touches is they're all talking to the jury whenever they're in the courtroom, and there's 12 empty seats there. I don't know why they did that, but there's just 12 empty seats.
It's a metaphor for juries really have no function, or
I don't know. It's an all white male jury in the book and in the movie, but there's 12 empty seats, and they don't pretend that there's no jury there. They're talking to the jury. The seats are
But there's
empty.
A beefed up black African American character in
yes,
this, right?
Yes, they actually give you more of his backstory, and his role is more prominent. The guy who's accused of rape, wrongly accused, and there's also a beefed up black character who's the housekeeper in the Atticus Finch household. Right. But there's no explanation as to why the kids are being played by adults, nor is there an explanation as to why the jury chairs are empty.
It's cheaper, you know, that way.
What's so that? You're cheaper yeah. that way.
The staging is really well done. The sets kind of like float down from the, you know, from the flywheels, you know, and all of a sudden it's a courthouse, and all of a sudden it's the Finch household. It's kind of cool staging. Things come up from the floor. I mean, I kind of
yes,
like
we've
it.
Never seen that on Broadway.
No, but it's kind of. I mean, I can't really visually describe it. I'm just saying it's done.
We get that it. Sense.
But it's yes, that's true. But it's done well. Look, I like it. I recommend it. I guess, you know, it was just.
This is like anything with you, Neil. It's the hottest show on Broadway, the hottest ticket. You waited a long time. I'm assuming you had house seats and
I bought the tickets.
No, but I mean, like, you had to wait a while to get there. So when you got there, you were a little disappointed, weren't you?
Yeah.
Where are my fucking jurors?
Well, the thing is, look,
did I wait so long for the tickets that the kids playing the actors grew up into adults? That's what you were thinking.
Well, I'm going to tell you how I got the tickets. I went on StubHub. And it's my wife's birthday this week, and we both wanted to see this very badly.
How much over retail did you pay?
I paid very little. As a matter of fact, if you want to see anything on Broadway, and this is my tip to anybody, if
you can also go to
New
Craigslist.
York, or you're coming to New York, is if you want to see something day of, go like go on StubHub a couple of hours before the play, and you can get a ticket. You know, people get stuck and they get panicky, and they will drop the price of the tickets. So I did not spend a lot for the ticket. I spent a couple of bucks over, you know, face value of the ticket.
Were you able to sit with your wife, or
yeah.
was she in another?
Yeah, and it was a good seat,
section.
And it was fine. The other tip I'll give you on coming to Broadway is go to. Although I saw it last night, we were taping this on a Wednesday. On Tuesday night, Wednesday night is the best night to get tickets to anything because all the tourists come in their Wednesday matinees. So they come in and they see the thing on Wednesday matinees. So if there's a hot show that you want to see, there's more tickets that are available.
Thank you,
on a
Fodor.
Wednesday night. No, this is a tip. Whether you're going to
these
the
are
TK...
professional ideas I'm giving you.
Whether this is the TKTS booth in Times Square, which are half price tickets, or if you're going to a site like StubHub or, you know, Vivid Seats or any of these discount seats. So anyway, I liked it. But again, to your point, Bill McCuddy, and you're absolutely right. When you come late to the party and you don't see it like in press previews or before anybody knows anything about it, invariably I'm disappointed.
Haven't seen it. My wife and daughter saw it almost a year ago, I guess, whenever it first opened.
No,
they were
that's 5 months, four or five months.
Okay,
ago.
They saw it 6 months ago.
And what did they think?
They loved it. They thought it was amazing.
Yeah, well, my wife loved it.
But they were in the early. You know,
I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I recommend it. I liked it. It's very good, but I don't think it's the greatest thing like that I've ever seen on Broadway.
Well, I see Jeff Daniels socially from time to time, so I'll tell him how profoundly disappointed you
are. No, well, you could tell him how,
I'll use your name.
How I thought his performance was great. I mean, okay. It's really hard to fill the shoes of an iconic performance, you know, in this case, Gregory Peck. It's like doing a remake, a stage version of Gone with the Wind or something. And, you know, he's the Clark Gable part. I mean, it's such an iconic role. I mean, how do you do that? But he did a really admirable job. He was
great. I'll tell you a quick,
the cast is great.
Quick, cool story about
and it
Jeff
does not
Daniels.
Have, by the way, it does not have that rat-a-tat iconic's the wrong word, that rat-a-tat patented Aaron Sorkin dialogue that you come to know in
Without giving my exact address.
Or Studio 60 or any of those Aaron Sorkin.
Without Sports Night, without doing telling you exactly where I live, we've mentioned on this podcast I live across from Carnegie Hall. And so,
not for long.
True West, yeah, we're moving downtown. But True West was playing for a while with Jeff Daniels. And or was it True West? It was something that was extremely physically
True West was, they had John C. Reilly.
I know John C. Reilly.
James Franco.
And
and
Seymour Hoffman a long time ago.
Oh, that was a long time. Yeah.
But, well, anyway, after some rigorous show, he used to jump on the subway. Wouldn't even, he'd run out the stage door, jump on the subway.
Jeff Daniels.
And get out at the stop on my corner. And four or five nights during that run, I would see him come running up the stairs pouring in sweat. And I asked him about it, like, later when I bumped into him. He said, I did that every night. I had to get out of there. I'd got on the subway because I was surrounded by humanity, because the inhumanity of this play or whatever, he didn't use those exact words, but he was like, I had to get out within the people. And he'd come running up, and then he would walk back to his apartment.
I'll tell you a Jeff Daniels story. Jeff Daniels and I went to Atlantic City together. He was getting an award.
Same limo?
From the, we went down there. They sent us down there. And he was getting an award from the VSDA, which does not, I don't know if it exists anymore. But this is like about 15, 20 years ago. It was the Video Software Dealers Association. And they were giving they had a convention every year. And he was the honoree for some of the work that he did. And they brought us both down there. I was doing the Q&A with him. And they put us up. And then I did the Q&A. And afterwards, you know, you take questions from the audience. And we had lunch and dinner together. And he was telling me that he had done a play on Broadway, and it was not received well by critics. It was called something about, not Redwood Forest, something, it came and went in like a week. Something about, he played this, he had a really like David Letterman-esque type beard, and he looked like a homeless person, and he was this guy that kind of like lived in the forest, and it got panned by critics, and it closed like immediately. And I was talking to him, not on stage, when we were having lunch, I was talking to him about this, and he goes, yeah, that Broadway, I don't know, it's like a real closed, like, coffee klatch club, you know? Like, you can't break
They'll never that, let me in.
You can't break that click, and they don't understand what I was doing, and I'm not doing that again. And it's interesting because Broadway, many years later, is where he's found his real fame and home, and they welcome him with open arms. And you know, he did that play which I saw with Michelle Williams, a couple of
Oleana, or it was
no,
based
Oleana
on
the, is William H. Macy. That's an
but it's the same story.
Well, it's a story. No, Oleana, by the way, is I was thinking of this as I was watching Jeff Daniels' list and To Kill a Mockingbird. I don't know why I was thinking of this because somebody was falsely accused.
They called
of rape.
It Blackbird, by the way, didn't they? When you said To Kill a Mockingbird, I think it. Wasn't that called Blackbird, the play you're talking about, where the woman accuses him of, and then they made a movie out of it, remember?
Well, Oleana, which is should be seen, I mean, is so timely with the Me Too movement, and it was written by David Mamet, and it's with William H. Macy, and I saw it off Broadway, and it was at the time Rebecca Pigeon, I believe, who was
the new girl.
David Mamet. So, yeah, I mean,
it's
a guy who's accused of all this stuff.
Spanish prisoner.
But no, this was, maybe it is called Blackbird, but it was Jeff Daniels and Michelle Williams. And she goes back, he's a teacher, and she goes back to confront this guy who we don't really know for most of the play. Whether
very similar to Oleana. I don't understand why you don't see that they're alike.
Did you see Oleana?
Yeah. And well, they made a movie about it review.
I see there's some correlation. I think it's kind of very different in terms of the fundamental. But all right, anyway. But Jeff Daniels is heralded on Broadway. I mean, it's just funny because he was like shunned by Broadway and he hated Broadway and now he loves Broadway. And if you read an interview that I read with him recently, he'll say like, I never thought that this late in my career that I would be having, like, this is the pinnacle of my career right now, and it's all due to Broadway. So he did a 180.
You know, I don't know if this helped, but he went back to Michigan where he lives, and he opened a small theater there. And I think he was the artistic director. and maybe that's where he got the chops back. Who knows?
Actually, we didn't take the right. He flew in from Michigan. Now that you mentioned, when we went to Lenox, right? He met me there. He had.
I'm glad you cleared that up.
He had a private plane. They flew him in to Michigan.
I think every listener thought that, but they didn't want to contradict you.
I'm remembering the story now. But Jeff Daniels is great. I mean, I loved him.
And maybe we didn't have lunch and dinner together.
No, we did something wild.
What did he order?
With Melanie Griffith and Ray Liotta is a great movie with Jeff Daniels.
That movie.
And we talked on the TV show. Which, by the way, go online to cuny.tv and you could see the latest episode of Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen. Or go to at Neil
Rosen. There's other people on it, too.
At neilrosenapples.com, you could see the show. But he was in the movie with Shirley in Terms of Endearment.
Yeah.
Right. So he's been on it. This guy's had a bit. And do you know it was the first movie that where he kind of got known by audiences?
No.
Purple Rose of Cairo, Woody Allen.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that wasn't his first. But
I think that was the first one where he became
I remember
known.
Hating that movie.
Yeah,
and now that
too.
Device of
really?
Popping off the screen is considered sort of cool. But I mean, at the time, I just thought, this is so par Woody Allen.
I read that Piermont, New York. So Woody Allen, not only are they not going to release that movie, Amazon, and he's suing them for like 60-some-odd million dollars.
Amazon isn't, but it's being released in Europe.
Yeah, Italy's getting it.
Italy's getting
it. Well, he's apparently he wrote his memoirs. His autobiography, and a number of years ago, before he fell out of favor and became, toxic by Hollywood and anybody, they offered him $3 million for his memoirs, and he said, no, for this, you're going to have to pay a lot more. And now nobody wants to pay like a dollar for the thing. He cannot. Nobody
I think
wants
the book would be an incredible seller.
Nobody wants to pick that up. And apparently he's making a movie in Mallorca.
You're where?
Mallorca.
We'll get him out of your Yorka.
So,
those are great cars, by the way.
So basically, Europe is releasing the movie. Amazon does not have the rights, the international rights to it, because I know it's Amazon Studios.
Apparently not. And he's having to go town to town, actually, and sort of or country to country and sell it.
Well, I want to see it.
Well, bootlegs of it will show up. I mean,
well, we got to see the
saddest thing about
Louis
all this.
We
is
got to see the Louis C.K. movie.
Right.
All those with Daddy, I Love You.
Neil, the sad thing is that this is going to have all this hype to your existence and the way you always see things, and like it's gonna disappoint. It's gonna be just another ordinary Woody Allen movie. That's
well, that
the
was
problem.
The thing with Woody Allen movies. Like they came out every year, so if there was a disappointing one, it's like, all right, got another one in a year from now. And
yeah,
you
we
know.
Need another Match Point, or we need another like
we need another Bullets Over Broadway, or we need another like Midnight in Paris, or the one I love with Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, those are all funny, though. I think what he needs to
What's
do
the
is
Kate
like,
Blanchett one that
you're the only one that likes Wonder Wheel.
No. That's
oh,
Kate
Blue
Blanchett.
Jasmine.
Yeah, Blue Jasmine's great.
No, those are all great. He needs another really strong drama that people go, God, this guy.
Lisa Rossman liked Wonder Wheel, too, by the way. And I don't think it's the Woody Allen's best, but I thought it was beautiful, beautifully shot, and I thought it was interesting. And they had Jim Belushi in it. I thought it was – did you like
beautifully
Wonder Wheel?
Beautifully shot is
really?
My
no.
term.
No. Okay.
Please don't use the term beautifully shot without referencing me. All right,
so
that's our show.
What do we got next?
Right.
What do we got next week?
Next week, Bill Bergoli.
That's right.
John Wick Chapter 3.
Oh, well, with Halle Berry.
And A Dog's Journey.
Oh,
which
Dennis
could make
Quaid.
A great double bill because, you know, he's still upset about his dog dying in the first movie. So there you go.
That's very funny. That's
very
right.
Good.
That was the whole thing.
What a high point to end on.
Yeah, there
Nicely
you go.
Done.
Well, again, sitting around talking movies.
Well, you can't
you
stop
watch our
us.
TV show, Talking Pictures. And the link is up, but if you follow me, I posted it at Neil Rosenapples on Twitter, but you can go to cuny.tv and see it. And Bill Bergoli, you can't follow
you can't
him
see
at all.
Me.
But
he's on Facebook, though.
Yeah, you saw.
Friend him on Facebook. He's not up to 5,000.
Not
Let's
yet.
Get him
How
there.
How many friends do you have on Facebook?
415.
Wow, that's pretty. That's not bad.
Not
that's
bad
not
for
bad.
A white guy.
And Bill McCuddy, we could follow Bill McCuddy.
At Bill McCuddy, or like me on Facebook, too. I got a couple left before I hit 5,000.
Bill McCuddy's having problems with Twitter lately. He's telling these it's beach balling when he's putting things up. He goes, I don't know, it takes me 5 minutes to like post something. And
by
I'm
the way,
happy.
Tomorrow night here in Manhattan, I'm being inducted into the Playboy Club. And a lot of my friends are coming, including these two characters, maybe, and if one of their wives will let him. And we'll talk about that next week because we'll have some tales to speak of.
Oh, God.
Oh yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm all ears.
Bunny tail. Stop, you're killing me. And I mean literally, I'm dying over here.
All right, well, anyway, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. And as always, we'll sit around talking movies again with you guys next week.